The following is a KTCK sports presentation.
Kick it. It's time for the Kick Around, the ticket style show about soccer and all that implies. Two straight hours of HSOs in the Premier League, MLS, the national team, and Champions League. Soccer never stops, and neither do our hosts. Hoping for an off-season at some point, here are Andy Swift and Peter Welton on Sports Radio, 96.7 and 1310, The Tick.
That was a great flick on by Carly Lloyd, and an important challenge on Lindsay Horan, but here's a chance for Rose Lavelle! The United States are off and running in Tokyo 2020. Relief of Vlatko Andonovski. It was a terrific finish by Rose Lavelle, her 15th goal for the United States, who lead New Zealand by a goal to nil.
Well, hi-de-ho, P1s. Welcome to today's Kick Around. Per normal, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310. The ticket where you, the good P1, sits around, talks soccer and all that implies. If by chance you are new here, my name is Peter, and with me is my soccer-talking BFF, and word around town is that he's really good at toasting marshmallows.
Hello, Peter. I didn't know about marshmallows, but I'm glad to know I am good at that.
What's his name, Peter?
Andy Swift. Damn it.
You almost had that one.
The most important part of that sentence you forgot.
Almost got radio right there for that split second.
Everybody listening to the radio is witnessing the slow decay of my brain as I get older and more decrepit.
I was going to ask if there was a specific reason, but it's just age. Huh?
Yeah, or okay. Early onset something or other. Yeah. Probably something along those lines. Man, I know it feels like this is the low point in the biorhythms of soccer.
What?
You know, biorhythms, they go up and down.
Why is this a low point? This is a summer of soccer.
Because there's just not a lot of stuff going on right now. I mean, there's Gold Cup, I suppose, but I just don't feel like there's a big...
The men are playing in their confederation's tournament.
Yeah.
We have a local professional team.
I'm not sure we can call it that anymore.
All the leagues are gearing up to start in Europe.
Okay, well, that's where we start to ramp back up in the biorhythm, right?
Okay.
And, of course, we have the women. But we got lots. So we'll figure out a way to fill up 2 hours of soccer talking. Probably peaking. The show will peak in itself because last night, yesterday, was the return of the thing that I feel like all of us deserve some sort of credit for being the original conductors
proponents
of the hype train of the bandwagon,
yeah,
which is the Ted Lasso experience. Came back for season two, and we will do a spoiler-free review of episode one.
That's so hard for me, Peter. I have a history with spoiler, but I'm going to focus.
What do you mean you have a history of spoiler? Did you spoil something last time?
No, not in this show, but long time ago, filling in. Remember the... was it Star Wars? Like one of the Star Wars that we were reviewing? One of the... Anyway.
I think you did spoil one of the...
Yeah,
Star
there
Wars
was
movies.
A epic meltdown spoiled.
Oh, one of the new Star Wars.
Yeah.
You announced 40 years after the fact that Darth was Luke's father or something like that.
No!
All right. Now, Andy, I need you to be very honest with the P1 and with me.
Sure, I'll tell you exactly how I saw the game and the mechanism. No, I did not get up at... Is this what you were going to ask? I knew that's what you were going to ask.
Did you get up at 6:30 this morning to watch... Well, that's right, you're not even American.
I did not get up at 6:30.
I did DVR
the game, just like I do a lot of EPL games that are on at 6:30.
You delay them?
Yeah, I watch on a delayed basis.
Do you hit the little fast-forward button until you see action happening?
Depends what 6:30 game... EPL game is the one I'm doing that with. For something like this, no, I won't go ahead and watch the whole
now,
thing.
Now, I do have to ask this question because it hit me later this morning because I had totally missed this, that the fracture of the Swift household was in place because Canada was facing off against Chile.
Right. And Olympic soccer.
And Olympic soccer.
and women's Olympics. This is a first.
Right.
Because, you know, Chile's kind of new to the women's game.
I mean, I'm sure you, as the only child of a Chilean mother and a Canadian father, you're just simply worried about the likelihood of divorce.
Well, you know that how I often bring up different allegiances that I have in World Cups and such. I was actually waving a new flag this weekend, and that was the flag of Switzerland.
You were trying to be the middle ground? Well, Canada did beat Chile this morning. But, of course, I'm referring to originally as the 6:30 game was the USA women's team having to face off against New Zealand on the heels of what I think most people felt like was a shocking result against Sweden. But I feel like, I swear, somewhere in the previous, on a kick around, a month or 2 months ago, we talked about that it just kind of felt like the U.S. was setting themselves up for that type of result.
Because of, not because of the results they had leading into the game, but more like they, I think part of it was just the opposition they were playing against.
Yeah, well, that's definitely part of it.
Right into the Olympics. Even though they played Sweden earlier this year, I think they tied, right?
Sweden was the only team that had scored on them in the new coaches, Vlatko's. Yeah.
And look, the team had won, had been undefeated 44 straight, had not lost in 44 straight, and
doesn't that always make you nervous going into these tournaments?
Yeah, especially game one, you know, and you kind of feel like... But Julie Foudy on the broadcast today said that that might have been the best thing that have happened to the U.S. is getting spanked like that by Sweden. So before we get into today's game, I just wanted to ask you, is like, what like it was so bad that despite all these things that we're saying and complacency and that can happen game one, something that bad though, that what happened? Because it was not good. I mean, Sweden was good, too, also, right?
Well,
credit to them.
Yeah. Well, first off, I think you have to start with that. I think Sweden decided that was their biggest game and they had to win it and set a tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly believe there are definitely other countries in the women's game that all target their ability to kind of judge themselves based on how they play the United States. And the U.S. has been so good. I mean, if you've taken any time to watch the women play in any of these preseason games, I mean, they're ridiculously good.
Mm-hmm.
And they could probably field 2-3 teams that all would have a chance at winning the Olympics.
Right. It's like Brazil and their depth.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But you also get into with this other issue, which I think is really important and not a lot of fun to talk about, which is all of the off-field politics stuff that's going on that I think does tend to take away the focus to a certain degree. I also think the new coach Vlatko is in a really weird situation because I think he's so good at his job and he's so smart about this that I think if you were to hold a gun to his head or take him off in a private room and just say, hey, look, no, it's just between you and me, he would admit that his selection of what ended up being a roster of an average age of over 30 is probably not what he really wants to do. But because of all of the political stuff,
the marketing stuff,
and the egos and politics of egos and superstars forced him to bring a lot of these players that he probably didn't want to.
And, you know, we compared it to the Brazilian men with the depth and that they could field two teams. And the Brazilian men's team has to put up with those kind of issues as well. And I agree with all that. But when a team comes out so flat and not unmotivated, because obviously they're motivated, but just looking like they just weren't motivated. In some respects, weren't motivated. Doesn't that fall back on the coach?
Well, yes. And I talk about this all the time.
No matter who you have playing out on the who you have on the field, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. Vlatko is definitely a better tactician of the game than Jill Ellis was. And certainly Jill Ellis famously got crapped on all the time for making all sorts of really weird roster and starting 11 decisions and tactical decisions, yet she won 2 World Cups.
Right.
And I think, and I've said this a lot before and I'll repeat it here, I believe Jill Ellis's superpower was understanding how to manage egos in a locker room of egos and making something out of a very volatile situation the best she could. Like, I don't think she had to worry about them playing well on the field. She had to figure out how to get them all to work together.
Yeah, it was the other stuff that she had to, like, make work.
And I don't think she will ever get enough credit for that.
And that's national team coaching is so much about that. And it's not putting the best 11, but not the quote, best 11, but the best 11 that worked together.
Yes.
Right?
But I also think in the women's game, it's even more important because the national team exposure for women's game is almost exclusively through the national team. It's not through their club teams. I mean, the amount of people that watch the club stuff, whether it be over in Europe or here in the United States, is a really small audience of people. The general public get to know Rapinoe and and Lloyd and all these players.
So that team
the national
is the marketing for U.S. women's soccer.
Yeah, and that's where they all make the really the bulk of their money, too.
Well, anyway, so the wake-up call came, and today they looked like they had gotten a wake-up call, and they played well. I mean, New Zealand, let's keep this in mind. They're not Sweden.
No.
New Zealand hasn't ever won a World Cup game and has never gotten out of the group stage at the Olympics.
And they had a really unfortunate setup of how they had to even get into the tournament and their ability to test and their kind of pre-tournament training and everything was really screwed up due to COVID and their ability to get together. So, you know, yeah, you're absolutely right. They are not Sweden. It was certainly not the big test, but it was probably the right thing that this team needed to kind of get their head right with ball. And now the real test comes on Tuesday. I guess it'll be Monday. I guess it's at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. Dallas time, Tuesday morning, the U.S. will play Australia. Now, they ended up winning 6-1 today. Two of those goals were own goals. And now, with facing Australia, they're up, I think, 2 or 3 goals advantage on goal differential. So a draw in that game actually will put them in second in the group. A win would keep them second. If Sweden somehow lost to New Zealand, that would change the story in terms of how possibly they'd end up first in the group. If they lose, there's a chance they could still go through because two of the three or two of the third place teams get to advance.
And their
goal
difference is pretty good now because of the 6-1 win today. So looking ahead, Sweden obviously a contender now for the gold. And who are we looking at? Netherlands and Brazil as the other two that we kind of have to pay attention to in this group.
Yeah, and they had a nutty game today. I think that game ended up 3-3 or something. And the Netherlands had a terrible back pass that just allowed Brazil to walk in for a goal. Look, you know, it was funny today. They threw, you know, Vlatko made a few changes in the starting lineup. And he put Carly Lloyd out there, who, by the way, turned 39 years old this past week. But you know what Carly Lloyd did? And by the way, yeah, I've got some bias because she's my personal friend. Yeah, we hung out one afternoon and chatted in front of 1,000 people.
Right, you did the
SMU lunch for
him. Yeah, nice.
But what I will point out, because they were all talking about setting a tone and how important it is and that, you know, Carly's going to be a leader. I don't know if you noticed this, but in the first 60 seconds of that game, she got stuck in twice. Mm-hmm. Top of the box, she slid tackled trying to keep a center back from clearing the ball, which then forced the ball out wide. And then she chased that ball all the way to the sideline and slid tackled that player to force a turnover.
So setting the tone.
That is winning your 50s.
Yeah, setting the tone. And it was a little bit of a rocky start today. But then when they settled down, they were fine today. Julie Ertz was amazing. By the way, I misspoke. New Zealand has reached the quarterfinals of the Olympics one time. They've never gotten out of the group stage of the World Cup.
It's always interesting to hear when you listen to all these women's teams from other countries, how many of them either have or previously had or currently are playing on collegiate teams here in the United States or in NWSL teams here in the United States.
It's a destination for sure for those aspiring to play pro ball abroad.
The other comment that I make every time there's a women's tournament, and I'm never not fascinated by this weird element of the game, is I do find myself enjoying, I know the game is slower, and I know it's not as skill-filled as the highest levels of the men's game, but I do enjoy the fact that the women, ironically, play the game without all of the drama and silliness
that
drives
play,
us. They just play. And very rarely does anybody complain about a foul or fall over, or all the things that we bitch about when it comes to the men's game. You just don't see it in the women's
game. And the U.S. had 4 goals called back to because of offside.
I actually tweeted this. Yeah. I asked Paul Carr at ESPN and the OptiStats people, because I've never...
You got friends in high places.
Well, no, I just tweeted. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen a game at this level have four goals called off for offside.
Not four. And three were legit. One, you know.
The Horan one I thought was a miss.
Right. But what was interesting was none of them complained. None of them went to the ref and said VAR and all that. They just, you know.
Yeah.
Which is your point.
Right. That's the one thing about the women's game that I really enjoy. And that's true whether you're watching at the international level or you're watching at any of the club levels. Yeah. They just, none of the silliness takes place. And some of those girls, by the way, the Carly Lloyd goal that she scored that was offside, the little chip over the keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow, that was a score.
Yeah.
That was such a nice goal. It was disappointing that it got, I mean, she was clearly offside.
The fourth goal, too, the one scored by Lavelle that came from Ertz's cross. Thigh trap, down, one touch. I mean, those are legit goals, you know?
For sure. So. I mean, Kristen Press's goal where she takes the ball out of the air and she makes a really smart placement of the ball, hits it with the right foot. And then I thought, Alex Morgan's goal, she came on as a sub and that ball came across the box and she made a really nice touch to set herself up and then she just... Her release is so fast and so clean. It's really quite impressive. So
it was Press that scored the goal from Mertz's cross.
It was Press. Lavelle scored the opening goal, which was at the near post, which was nice too. By the way, I've decided, and Sam, you can back me up on this. Rose Lavelle is the Clarice Starling of soccer to me.
Okay, I can go with that. I never considered that before.
She reminds me of Clarice Starling in some weird, kind of weird way.
I can see this.
From Silence of the Lambs.
I can...
Just kind of like general vibe.
Is it the paleness that...
Maybe pale, maybe the structure of her face, maybe just the vibe.
Not Jodie Foster, with just the character.
The character.
Okay.
Yes. Well, like if Clarice Starling played soccer, Rose Lavelle, it would be like Rose Lavelle.
Right. I can see it. I never had thought about that before in my life, but I think you're right.
I was thinking about it today when she was playing, because she's such a cool little player, and she's so unusual and quirky and weird. That was the one thing that came to mind. Like, she kind of makes me think
quirky and weird.
Yeah. You know what I mean? If you saw Rose Lavelle at the mall, would you go, that's a world-class soccer player?
No, I guess. I mean, you know.
She just is kind of different looking.
Very unassuming.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Sam. Thank
but
you.
Wonderful.
When is the big game against Australia? Tuesday?
It is Tuesday, 3 a.m. Dallas time.
Oh, wow.
And the deal with this is that, you know, if they win or draw, they're through. If they lose, they're in a weird pickle because the other games that would then decide if they get to go through as a third place team don't happen until after their game is over. So they'll have to sit around and stew for a bit.
They could probably lose. Just don't lose by more than one.
Probably.
They're good. Yeah. Probably. I don't see them losing.
Okay. So there you go. USA 6, New Zealand 1. All is right in the world. And when we come back, look what's right around the corner. League play. And we'll talk about it next here on the Kick Around.
Just a thought. If you got a loved one or a friend in your life that really likes a particular soccer team, a jersey for that team is typically a pretty kick-ass gift idea. And Soccer90.com is your source for Premier League, national team, and international club gear. Now here's the thing. There's an actual Soccer 90 store up at Toyota Stadium next to the Hall of Fame in Frisco and Main Street, and you should absolutely go check it out in person. When you walk in, it's kind of a wonderland of soccer goodies, walls covered with jerseys and stuff from clubs all over the world. But of course, you can also shop online at soccer90.com. And of course, because it's up at Toyota Stadium, they got all your FC Dallas gear, including the new pre-match camo jersey, limited supply available. So go visit them at the store at the stadium or shop at soccer90.com. And because you're a good P1, you get 25% off your purchase when you use the code KICKAROUND at checkout at soccer90.com.
Andy and I went on a soccer date last Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great success. Mm-hmm. High entertainment.
You lived.
Peter and Andy went to the Cotton Bowl, and we'll do that story here before the end of the show. Welcome back to the Kick Around. I'm Peter. He is Andy. And as I said at the beginning of the show, while it may feel like we're at the valley of the soccer calendar, we're starting to turn a corner. Because if you open up the interwebs or look at your social medias, you're starting to see some preseason action.
The transfer window is open. Teams are buying and selling players.
Are you? How closely do you follow all that? The rumors and all. You one of those?
I'm going to let you just assume away.
Because I'll admit, I don't do preseason.
You go on
closely.
Soccer vacation.
I do.
How do you do that
with club soccer stuff? I just do. I've done it 20 years now.
Now I have been alerted that that would appear that the Kick Around has done its job with one of its own. Josh, remember Josh was assigned Burnley from the Supreme Wheel of Allegiance.
Yes,
that's gone up and down for Josh. But he is so now mostly tied to the team. He's such a Sam Dyche fan. The Ginger Mourinho.
I'm sorry, who?
You know, I follow too many Burnley things now, so all this stuff just floods my timeline right when you wake up, because that's when they're going to bed. Because that's 7 hours ahead, so they're like all winding down their day.
I don't think the math works there.
Well, what do you mean? Oh, at 6 in the morning?
Yeah, well, no.
It's like noon.
6 in the morning. Well, they're like, it's the peak of their day, I guess. So they're publishing all their stuff, and all their games have been played on the weekend. So I wake up and I scroll Twitter, and that's all I see is soccer.
But you actually watched, I'm getting to the point that I have been alerted to the fact that you may have watched a Burnley preseason game.
No, I didn't watch it.
Oh.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. It was on Twitter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's actually not possible to watch the Burnley.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know
game.
How to go.
Well, I thought
that.
Maybe you had bought some sort of access to their team only video platform or something.
You think I can afford to buy things on
makes
my,
like $2
my ticket
an hour.
Money?
I don't know.
You stoked about, no pun intended, Nathan Collins coming?
I don't know who that
is. To the
club. All right, don't push our luck.
I'll Google it.
He's getting it, right? He's growing.
This
he's
is progress.
Getting, we're moving along.
Because he played for Stoke.
What position does he play?
Mid.
They need mid. I know that.
So the point of this particular segment is just to kind of prepare ourselves for the reality that, you know, we're not too far away from the start of the next season. All the seasons. And I also feel like we're at a point in the show's history where some changes, some reformatting or spit shining the show up a little bit is due.
Okay.
And a lot of it, frankly, is due to the fact that in the last 2-3 years, the number of young Americans or the attention of the general fan base has spread away from just being almost exclusively focused on the Premier League.
Yeah.
Like, more people now watch the Bundesliga, more people watch Serie A, La Liga, and we're getting almost equitable access to those leagues because now they're all on one of the streaming platforms.
Yep.
So, that being said, Andy, when do the leagues all start?
So, all of them, EPL, La Liga, and the Bundesliga, all start the 13th of August. Serie A will wait another week and start the 22nd.
Hmm. So, we're just like two, three weeks away?
3 weeks away, yeah.
Three weeks away.
But, you know, we need to preview it leading up to it and give our predictions. And, you know, I start paying attention 7 to 10 days out.
Is that when
because that's when the signings are,
come
you know,
back
it's the
from soccer vacation.
The rumors beat me down, you know, and you like all of these rumors flying around and, you know, 80% of them, 90% of them, bunk.
It was weird because I walked into the green room before the show and sat down on the floor and started reading this article that was in The Athletic today about how Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool now have the opposite problem at center back that they had last
Overcompensated.
Season.
He had to, though, like to pull off what they pulled off.
But the point in me telling this is that you seemed ignorant to this fact or uninterested because you're in soccer vacation.
Oh, yeah.
See what I'm saying?
You even asked me how many center backs are in camp, and I guess 10, and it was 8.
I think you initially said 20.
No, I said 10, and it's 8, and it's a lot because you use 2 in a game. So what are they going to do with all the center backs? They're going to sell Phillips.
All right. Well, so are you in particular? So I think in terms of the show, what we've decided to do is, you know, we have young Tyler Kern, who is kind of our Bundesliga expert. And somehow we need to figure out a way to convince Tyler he needs to call, check in regularly to give us a Bundesliga update.
You know, I feel like the Union Berlin shout out when we asked who we should follow.
You got to forgive him for that.
I think that kind of
He owes us.
It makes him gun-shy a little bit now.
Yeah, but
we
need,
told him. We've
we need
told
to
him
be
it's
supportive.
Okay.
It's
yeah,
okay.
You can move on from that.
It was a good a good shout at the time.
Yeah.
And then, now, La Liga's a different animal.
Yeah, La Liga's a crazy league because it's basically two teams plus one. Atletico, who won now.
Right. It's hard. One, you it know, seems really rare. Unfair for you to say two teams plus one when they just won the damn thing.
But this is what I'll say about La Liga. I think things are changing in a little bit. And the next 5 years are going to be very interesting because Barcelona and Real Madrid are going to be allowed to spend a lot less now. Did you know that in 2019, by the way, and let's talk quickly about Barcelona, because Messi's had to take a 50% pay cut. But in 2019, right before the pandemic hit, their payroll was $450 million, which was $100 million more than the next highest payroll, which was Man United, Man City. They go back and forth at $350. They're going to go down to $150 million this year, which sounds crazy, but that's like Spurs level. Barcelona is going to be Spurs level in terms of spending, which is
nuts. Do you really
nuts.
Believe that that's actually the real number?
I don't know, but it's the paper number. Either way, they're going to be spending a lot less. This is crazy. La Liga has a salary cap, but it's not every team gets to spend the same amount of money.
What?
La Liga's salary cap is based on how much revenue you bring in. So the more
revenue
you bring
in. So it's kind of like the financial fair play rule.
It is, but that's always made Barcelona and Real Madrid have an advantage because they bring in so much more with marketing and the brand.
So, I've never known this. Where'd you find this out?
I've just read it recently, like over the last couple days.
Really?
Yes. Fascinating.
It seems
I
like
didn't
a really, really loosey-goosey salary cap.
That's what it is. It's like a financial fair play that they themselves police. La Liga polices.
That seems like a really weird way to institute a salary cap that then clearly benefits the clubs that can
Barcelona,
generate all kinds of revenue.
Barcelona, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But I think over the next 5 years, the pandemic, I think, might even things out a little bit because of what's happened.
Well, and the other thing is now that there are so many Americans playing in Serie A, And I really want to get reattached to Fiorentina, which was the team that I chose as my Italian club to follow.
Oh, yeah, you're gonna bring the crest back.
But I just don't know the reality of how much I'm gonna watch. So I think I began to do some researching and trying to figure out who we could get to help do some coverage. And I think I found somebody. So somebody that actually worked and spent time in Italy.
Yeah, right.
And speaks very good English and is a P1. So,
nice.
We'll reveal who that person is at a time closer to the start of the season.
And he can help me.
And we have Lars, too, to help us do English stuff.
He can help me find a Serie A team. Unless, or maybe I do the wheel.
No,
I don't know.
Doing the wheel.
I might
We're
do
all
the
doing
wheel.
The wheel that doesn't have a Serie A team.
All right.
Peter already
right.
has
Fair
one.
Enough.
Right. All three of us agreed the wheel will determine our Serie A.
Are we only doing the Serie A, or are we doing the wheel for all of the...
I think we should start with Serie A and see how that goes, and then if we can take the expanded bandwidth, we should move out.
Can we do the wheel next time we're on for Serie A for us three? So I want to know who to start to follow as the season approaches.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do it. We're off next week.
Yeah.
We'll do it the week after
Perfect.
That.
All right.
How about that?
Yeah.
We'll spin the Italian wheel of Supreme Allegiance. Wait.
La Suprema.
Be very careful with that, Peter.
Yeah, something. So,
we'll come up with a cool Italian snazzy name.
The Supreme Wheel of Allegiance Serie A edition.
La Ligianza.
Maybe our new Italian correspondent speaks enough Italian that he can help us figure out what to call the stupid thing in Italian.
La Carreta de la Suprema.
Is that Spanish?
That's kind of Italian Spanglish.
What would it be in Portuguese, Mr. Man of many, many languages?
La Carreta de Supremacia.
I don't know if I believe that.
I hate that. It sounds like something you just made up. All right. So the point being is all of our league fund that makes up the bulk of this show over the course of the year is all getting ready to rev back up. I don't know if we're doing a preview show this year, like, you know, Wednesday night goof off preview show or not. I don't know if we're doing that. That is all TBD. But we're about 3 weeks away from the start of the Premier League, La Liga, the Bundesliga, etc. Now, when we come back, believe it or not, the U.S. men's national team is actually playing a meaningful game here in Dallas. Does anybody care? We'll talk about that next here on the Kick Around. Okay, welcome back to the Kick Around. Now, I apologize because I've suddenly become distracted like the dog and the squirrel in the Pixar movie Up.
Because your favorite sport is on TV.
Because my new favorite sport, handball.
You're new.
Team
it's
handball.
Not new. It's not your new favorite. You've always had that as your favorite sport.
Yeah, I am.
You've been a closet handball fan.
It is. Isn't it fascinating?
Sorry.
And what I don't understand is I think the game is so visually appealing, I don't get why it's not being played here in the United States.
We have enough sports. We're overflowing with sports.
We're oversported, yeah.
I agree. I don't disagree. Yeah. But I'm watching on ESPN 11-teen cornhole championships and that weird game the college kids play with the a spike ball or whatever it is.
Well,
although that does actually look kind
of
cool. Yeah. But you got frisbee football or whatever.
Disc golf. Ultimate frisbee.
Thank you.
Get rid of that too.
Ultimate Frisbee's kind of cool.
That's very spare. Super spare. Disc golf is awesome.
I don't mean this the way this is going to sound.
Yes, you do. Just say it.
No. Well, I just wonder, is it really fair for you to be calling sports spare? Because are you a sports person? Do you play any sports?
Not anymore.
Okay.
It's been a minute. I would like to, but I'm also terribly out of shape.
So I feel rugby and lacrosse are making strides now.
Well, lacrosse
is
huge.
Yeah, and rugby. No, to get to the professional league level.
Right.
You know, so handball's behind them.
Okay. All right.
You know, I mean, and just in terms of timing and.
I just want to understand handball better, but these guys are throwing themselves on the floor and they're flying across
like
the face
ball.
Of goal. And then I also noticed that, you know, they get to do their version of the penalty kick. And if you thought penalty kicks were egregiously one-sided, the penalty throw. Seems really unfair for the goalkeeper.
Do you take a running start?
No, you got to stand, but you can juke and start and stop, and it just seems way too easy to score. So.
Like juke them down one way and then...
Yeah, if you haven't watched Team Handball, you should take a few minutes during the Olympics and absorb it and let us know.
Can you imagine penalty kicks if you could go up to the ball, stop. Put your ball, put your foot over it, come back.
So many bits.
What would Neymar do if he could do that?
Oh, he'd probably sit on it or something like that. Well, no doubt.
Wow. Okay.
All right. The Gold Cup is here.
Yeah, indeed.
And I'm just going to be honest. I feel a little weird because we complain all the time. I hear this all the time. Man, the U.S. men's national team never plays in the Dallas area.
But that's not true, actually. They've been here.
They have, but not as often as they get to play out in L.A. or on the East Coast or whatever.
Okay.
Well, they're actually playing a meaningful game, a quarterfinal game against Jamaica tomorrow. Now, it's a late game. I think it starts at 8:30 or 9 tomorrow.
O'clock.
Is it 9?
It is 9.
9 o'clock.
9 are the two start times.
And it's unfortunately inside the Death Star, which is the worst place in the world to watch a soccer game. Am I wrong?
In what regard?
It's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the bad part. The bad part is just the field situation because it's a little the field's a little small.
That'll be fixed.
I know.
That. We are going to fix that, Peter.
I know. I'm sorry if I'm doing people a disservice by saying that because that's probably not helping our PID to get the World Cup.
Stick in the mud here, Peter.
Well, my point being is that I don't under I had this weird sense that there is not a lot of excitement about. I don't really know anybody going to the game.
Yeah, I know some people going, and there's probably some pressure to get a decent crowd because you know we want to bring the World Cup here, and it's important to show well. I wonder if some of it has to do. What you mentioned, definitely late on a Sunday.
Sunday.
It's the USBC team.
That's not helping it either.
Maybe that, you know, Jamaica as the opponent, you know, the US-Jamaica doesn't have a Clasico feel to it.
Yes.
Right?
By the way, Andy and I will tell the story of going to Fair Park in the Cotton Bowl last Sunday night for El Salvador, Mexico.
That's a Clasico.
We'll talk about that here a little bit.
So, you know, all those things contribute. You know, so, but it's still a meaningful game and an important game for the U.S. And, you know, as the U.S. tries to figure out if this bunch will provide some players that can give the national team some depth when it comes to qualifiers, a starter maybe or two. I don't know.
Now, Sam, you're going to the game, right?
One more time?
Oh, my God. Never mind. So the game tomorrow, 9 p.m., I think the big question going off of this game for the U.S. is how is Berhalter going to handle the starting 11? Is he going to play a back three? Is he going to play a back four? Zimmerman's hurt, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, have you watched Jamaica much in the Gold Cup? Because, you know, he will adapt to the opponent more than I feel he needs to. I feel like the U.S. needs to more impose their game. And Berhalter seems to be one that likes to tinker a lot, too, depending on who yeah. they play, right?
Well, he's got a lot of, you know...
But in fairness, he's got to deal with his roster, right? Which is not ideal.
Right. He made the decision to call up the players he did and treat this Gold Cup as the experimental lab yeah, sure. that he wanted it to be, where he could, you know, suss out players for World Cup qualifying. It mm-hmm. is what it is. I have seen Jamaica in bits and starts over the tournament. They have not looked very good to me. Now, they clearly have guys on the team that are fast and can get in behind. But I don't necessarily think that's been a real issue for the United States at this point. You know, this kid from New York that's been playing Sands has been kind of a revelation yeah. of a player. He's really, really quite good. And I think he clearly is the replacement player for Zimmerman in this situation. So I'm not too concerned about that. I just think the rest of it, how it comes together and if they can be consistently dangerous yeah. in attack is where we need to... keep an eye on.
So against Canada, and this is Canada's A team minus their best player, and it's the US BC team, so we have to keep that in mind. But the US scored a quick goal first minute against Canada, and then it was Canada largely
yeah.
taking it to the US, and because Canada can't shoot.
Was Jamaica one of the teams that threw through their standing automatically qualified for this?
Yes, they didn't have to go through all yeah, the rigmarole. Right, exactly. So what we've seen all kinds of all the stages from this US national team. We saw them play a Haiti team that played the low block and they had trouble getting through that. We saw a team Martinique that wasn't very good but went ahead and on attack and opened up space, and the US was able to exploit that space. And against Canada, they played a decent team. So I think Jamaica and Canada kind of even, maybe? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, Jamaica clearly has a good goalkeeper. The guy from Philadelphia that starts for them is quite good. So...
It's a game you need to win.
Yes.
And then you look ahead, and then you would play the winner of Qatar, El Salvador, and that is going to be a real test.
Between... I mean, whoever they end up playing between those two teams?
Yes.
Yeah. Qatar's been, you know... Now, I don't think Qatar's been a surprise to me just based on how they've been playing in their own mm-hmm. Confederation, but I think a lot of people are surprised they're even in the tournament. I've been asked a lot why a team from the Middle East is playing in the Gold Cup, but that's an invite thing that happens on a regular basis.
Sure,
and they also are looking to pick up games because, remember, as a host nation, they don't get to play World Cup qualifiers,
right, yeah.
so they're always looking to pick up games and play in tournaments, so you're going to see them doing that a lot. And they're not necessarily... this bad side, mostly because on the eve of them realizing they had a really good shot at getting the World Cup, they began stuffing and naturalizing
right.
Citizens into their team that aren't naturally from Qatar.
Right.
There's lots of Brazilian Qatarians.
The net of that, though, is that if the U.S. does advance and they do beat El Salvador, that's going to be a good game and it's going to be a good test.
Yeah.
For these young American kids on the roster for the Gold Cup. And that's going to be an important game, but they have to get past Jamaica. The roster so far, other than Sands, who has made a case that they deserve to be part of the World Cup qualifying roster?
That's a really good question. Man.
I mean, it's Kellen Beckin. He had a fair performance, a bad performance, and an average performance.
Yeah, you know, I think Daryl DK's had kind of similar performances.
Not great against Canada. So inconsistent,
yeah,
I guess,
yeah,
right? Has been the case, maybe.
To be honest, I haven't seen anybody that really just has blown me away.
Right.
Sands, I think, is the one guy that really has shown for a lot of people, because nobody was expecting him to play, and he's been forced to play.
And he's young.
And he's very young, but he's very athletic. In fact, I think there are a lot of people that think he actually is a better holding mid than he is a center back.
Yeah?
And that he actually could come in and be like a Tyler Adams backup type player.
Does he play that at NYCFC? No, he plays center back, I think, at NYCFC.
Yeah, yep. But I do think he has time as a holding mid as well.
He does.
And
he's got some both.
Yeah, so he's got some skill sets there that you know, make him available to that really grab people's interest. Because, again, when it comes to the team that goes to qualifying, the most important player is Tyler Adams because he kind of ties so many other pieces together, and they don't have a lot of people that they can stick in that position on the high likelihood that Tyler Adams is hurt. That's even close to his skill set.
Yeah, that's one of the big issues right now. And the number nine, those are the two big issues with the U.S. team at the senior level.
Yeah, tomorrow night is a big deal. Let's try this again. Hey, Sam, I understand you're going to the game tomorrow.
I sure am.
All right. So, is this your first U.S. national team game?
It sure is. Yeah, yeah. I've only been to a soccer game at that stadium once. It was Mexico-Argentina a few years ago.
Okay.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Will you get there early to watch Canada-Costa Rica in the first game of the doubleheader?
I do intend to go see both games. Nice. I'm going to leave work here, go home, grab a little snooski, and then meet up with my buddy who I'm going with, and I do intend to go watch both games.
Okay. Big day of soccer for you tomorrow.
I'm very excited. I've never seen...
Have you acquired any sort of wacky U.S. costume to wear?
I don't have a costume. I think I'm just going to go my... I've got one of the four-star kits from the women that has been my primary...
What about a wrestler's mask? Oh, wait. That's wrong. Wrong national team.
I was going to say, yeah, that'd be a little weird.
Big Uncle Sam hat or something.
If you've got one, I'll take it.
No, you're going to have to come up with your own costume,
I have to buy the costume?
Well, of course, yes. That's how you become... Yeah. That's how
Captain America? Shield.
I envision you in like a big Eagles costume or something,
like the mascot costume.
Yeah, like a big eagle,
something
American
to get
eagle.
On TV.
Yeah, so, yeah, we want you on TV.
You don't want me on TV.
Will you take a sign at least? Like,
what do
hey
you want
guys,
the sign to say? The kick around.
The kick around. Yes, kick around in the house.
Do they let signs in? I
sure
honestly
they
am
do.
Asking. I don't
sure
know.
Sure they would. Yeah,
if there's no cussing on the sign.
Yeah, I'm not going to drop an F-bomb on a sign. That would be a little too much, even for this game.
It's important to go support your national team, Sam. Good on you for doing
I'm
it.
I'm very excited.
And it's important that we have a good showing, Peter, here in Dallas for this game here in North Texas.
I know, and I would encourage everybody to go because the team's here and we don't get them here very often. So everybody should go to the game.
Yes, and it's your national team, even though it's the B team. These are important games. Berhalter, the coach, needs to find out who will be depth, who can provide depth when the team goes and qualifies for Qatar.
So it starts at 9 o'clock. It is at the Death Star. It's on Fox Sports 1, I believe.
Correct.
So, U.S. Jamaica.
You got a prediction? Sam?
It's a good question.
Okay.
I guess we don't... I'm worried about predicting.
Okay.
I'm kind of scared because I feel like the U.S. should win. But I'm kind of scared to put that in the ether because I just don't know if I trust
both
them.
Both of you are not
2-1 U.S. in extra time.
There we go. All right.
I like it. I support. I'm not willing to go on that limb with you, but I'm very nervous, even though I'm very excited.
All right. Well, I hope. Don't run on the field, Sam. That's my one thing I ask you not to
do.
Do
I look like someone's going to run?
Okay. Don't waddle on the field.
Okay. Very good. That's much better advice.
All right. Go get grandma. Go get the kids. Go get your spouse, go get your neighbors, huddle around the radio because it is that time. We review Ted Lasso Season 2, Episode 1, next here on The Kick Around. Welcome back to The Kick Around. Hi, I'm Peter. That there is Andy. And while we've been talking soccer, and all that implies... It is time now for us to stop down, as Mike Reiner would say, and discuss the great phenomena, which has come back to thrill us all, which is Apple TV's Ted Lasso. It returns. Now, again, I just want to reestablish that we were the original drivers of the bandwagon. I'm
the first in the U.S., no doubt.
Well, I'm at least going to claim North Texas radio.
100%.
All right, okay.
Because we were talking about Ted Lasso when it was a TV commercial for NBC taking over the Premier League.
In fact, didn't we say that should be a show?
No, I'm pretty sure
we didn't do that.
I'm pretty sure we all thought that would be a really stupid idea for a show, especially when we found out it was being turned into a show.
I think when that happened, we were skeptical.
We were. Yeah. Well, because the premise of the idea of the guy that was in the TV commercial seemed like it would have a very, very short run.
Yeah.
It would be funny for maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah, and then it wouldn't wear off.
And then it wouldn't be funny anymore.
The caveman show from the Geico Caveman.
Right, exactly. But lo and behold, season one appeared, And by the end of episode one, you know, I think we can all agree, we looked at each other or looked at whoever we watched the show and went, you know what? That was kind of interesting. Okay, we'll stick around for this. And you watch, by the time you got to the end of episode three, you're like, I love Ted Lasso so much.
Yeah. I remember watching the first scene of episode one and thinking, man, I don't know. I don't know if.
Right, because it was a soccer cliche.
This. Yeah. But then, bam, something happened. Boom.
It was one of those weird Jason Sudeikis, Ted Lasso, heartfelt speeches.
Yeah.
That you were like, oh man, that kind of felt good.
There's some truth to what he said.
And I do wonder if season two is going to end up blowing up as much as season one, because I do feel like season one benefited, ironically, from the pandemic.
Yeah, because it got people to watch it. Because, and you know what? People are used to binge watching, too. And this is the thing about this show, is they release it on a weekly basis. And people are now used to binge watching programming, right? Shows, their favorite shows, people binge watch. So the trickle of one show a week, I think it puts some people off. But season one didn't really get to be a thing, and people didn't start talking about it until like halfway through the season.
Well, I would say,
maybe when it was all done.
Yeah, I think the vast majority of people who found and fell in love with Ted Lasso didn't find it until well after the season. Yeah. You know, all the episodes had come out,
and then they could binge watch. And part of what helped too is I think people that had access to Apple TV, and because Apple made it very easy for you to get free Apple TV to get this thing going, and they still, you know, go buy an Apple product and you get to watch it for free for another 3 months, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think that helped, because some people were like, oh, okay, now I have Apple TV, and it was really the only thing that they had that was any good for a while. Might still be. So I think all that helped.
No, there's other good shows.
Okay. Yeah,
but For All Mankind is very good.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But remember early on, it was kind of, So, but my question to you and Sam is, heading into season two, because I'm so used to season twos being very often disappointments, or you can't keep it going, you can't keep this thing going. Did you go into season two fearing that it's just not going to be, that the magic is going to be gone a little bit,
not
that they're
going
to try too hard and all this stuff?
I was not afraid of that at all.
You were optimistic?
I was very confident.
I was confident they would end up putting a good season together. What I'm now worried about is the kind of the very obvious backlash that will become, because now it's so popular, it's one of those things that's going to become uncool to be a fan of. That's what it's going to be, like the new Coldplay.
Yeah,
that's what I'm worried about.
Maybe we get there. I don't know. I think expectations are now so high.
It's too soft and squishy and warm, and all of the negativity and cynics out there will eventually.
I know, but I think a lot of those kind of came around and became fans of the show. Yeah, and it's kind of a show that is. I mean, it's good for the pandemic, too, like what we've been going through.
Well, I think that's why. Yeah, the guy that does the show, there's another show that he did previously that had the same effect on my wife and I when we watched it. That had the name in my head.
Scrubs?
No. Well, Scrubs is a very good example.
I mean, that was his kind.
No, My Name is Earl. My Name is Earl was on NBC, and it was such a good, heartwarming. Mm-hmm. At the end of every episode, you were like, man, that was just great. That
was
fun to watch. It was really, really good. And it's the same way I feel. And Scrubs was largely that way, too. But that's how I feel about Ted Lasso.
Anyway, not disappointed after watching one show, because I was a little bit fearful. How can they live up to the hype? How can they make it better? And I feel like it picked up right where it left off. I don't feel like there was it's starting, you know, sometimes episode ones aren't as good until they get the season going. This first episode I thought was solid.
I don't want to spoil anything, but season one, I was somewhat surprised to find out how they started season one. So if you'll remember, I mean, season two.
Episode one, season two.
At the end of season one, we were all surprised and delighted by how they ended season one, which was them actually getting relegated. And the twist to that was how they got relegated, and the kind of cool little side story that goes along with that, that was really great and really kind of tied the season up really nicely. But now we come into season two. They're now playing in the championship.
Mm-hmm. Division two. Yeah.
And they've started the season with seven consecutive draws.
Right. Which ties a record. Seven consecutive ties tied the record.
And they're playing Nottingham Forest mm-hmm. in the actual first set of, and once again, they've upped the ante a little bit on the in-game action. Like, the referee doesn't look like he's wearing some random stuff he pulled out of a closet.
It's still not ideal. In-game action is not ideal. If you're a purist, if you go in wanting, like, exact soccer movement, right?
Being a nerd and just enjoy the show.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't nitpick about the quality of the in-game action.
Because it's not about that.
And there's an incident that happens in one of these games. It's ridiculous and sets the tone for the rest of the episode and is this focal point of the story. And you can kind of see, and then it introduces a new character.
Yeah. Which I think is going to be brilliant this year.
Yes. The woman that is playing this particular character, and when you see the episode, she is phenomenal in this role. The whole scene of her coming into Ted Lasso's office and interrupting their weird, silly game and. Yeah. That is fantastic.
The assistant coach, what's his name?
Coach Beard.
Coach Beard.
Yeah, but the actor.
Or Brendan. Brendan.
Yes. Anyway, he is awesome. Brendan Hunt, right?
Yes, Brendan Hunt. They're all awesome.
Yeah.
The whole thing is great. I like how, is it Nate? The kit guy that
the kit, yeah. Uh-huh.
how suddenly he's become a hard ass.
That's building up to something that
like
the bad cop.
Yes. And then there's always the weird kind of like romance off the field side stories with the owner, and she's got a date, and it's all great. The whole thing is just so good. And again, the reason why I say that we're going to stop down and not talk about soccer is because Ted Lasso is not about soccer.
No.
And if you're one of the few people left on the earth that did not watch season one and you thought, I don't want to watch a show about soccer, it's okay. Yeah. It's not about soccer.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Football is life. No.
I don't want to give away the music used at the end credits, but stay through to the end credit.
What about this?
The music used at
the end credits. This in pre-show about the
Was there something beyond the music? Was there like a
no? Because it ties some
stuff up. Mid-credit scene or post-credit scene or anything that I missed?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it was just saying, the music. Stick around for the credits. Yeah, the music.
You may need to explain that. I don't think you were spoiling anything by discussing that.
I was when the credits rolled up and they hit that song.
Right.
It tied it into the story and it tied it into a recent. Event.
Why don't you talk about the song itself and its relationship to Maradona? Because I think you can talk about that without giving away anything.
Yeah, life is life. Because soccer is life is the mantra used by the player.
Mm-hmm.
And life is the Maradona song that he's associated with because of that cool video that we have of him warming up before a Champions League game. His teammates are warming up on the side. And he's warming up to that song by himself. And it's kind of been...
If you're looking curiously at your radio, you've seen the video. It's Maradona in a track jumps a jacket and he's just got his shorts on. He's taking his track pants off and he's just juggling the ball in a very circus like.
Yeah. And life is a song. I don't know if we can.
Yeah. And life is playing in the background in the stadium while he's just doing this. And it's like it's a stadium filled with tens of thousands of people. And Maradona is doing this like he's the only person in the world. It's a really magical little piece of video, and you've seen it, but that's the song that's getting played over the credits.
Right, and what's the player's name? Danny. Danny. Yeah.
Danny Rojas.
His thing is
let Danny
football
tell
is life.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so they played Life is Life. At the credit, and it just kind of, it's like, hey, it's a tribute to Maradona.
Okay.
And it.
So we're all going to place our bets here. Will, by the end of season two of Ted Lasso, will AFC Richmond win promotion back to the Premiership?
Yes.
Place your bet now. You say yes?
I say yes.
You say yes.
I say yes. I can predict through season three, and they've said three seasons, that's it.
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I'm going to say that they miss out on promotion by some weird, ridiculous, heartbreaking... yet also heartwarming.
That would make sense.
Side, you know, event.
Is it going to be the same event that we just witnessed at the beginning of the show and it just happens again at the end?
Or maybe that same event helps them get promoted.
That hurts my head, Andy Swift.
I really wish I could tell y'all, but it would spoil too much of the episode. The text that Josh sent me when he was watching the episode yesterday about the new character that has been introduced, he had a very wild theory that I'm not even sure I can repeat on the air because of its... But I would spoil too much. Josh, do you want to take a crack at this and see if you can do it without spoiling
no,
it?
No, because I don't think you can say it without...
spoiling the episode?
Talking about who she is, yeah.
Yeah.
I can mention it off.
Well, no, I think it's okay to say there's a new character on the show that is a psychiatrist, a sports psychologist that they bring in. And she's very stern and very direct. She's a fantastic actress.
I have a theory about her methods. I'll say that.
She's the perfect foil for him, too. Or Ted Lasso.
Yes, and you can see Ted's very concerned that somebody's better at psychology than he is.
And it's headed where he's going to need help. You know that it's going that way.
Yeah, because he needed help last season, too, with the divorce and everything that happened there.
So what's do you have the song playing?
No, we're not finding the same copy. YouTube is failing us.
It's there. But that's
not all right, so you're saying they do get promoted. Sam says they get promoted. I said they don't. What did you say, Josh? Did you make a guess?
I didn't. I feel like they have to at this point, but... I don't know. Maybe they'll move to and play in the MLS next
year. Interesting.
Now, I'll also point out, for those who care about these things, we did not see the debut of the new Orange Away kits, the Richmond kits that we saw in the trailer. And if you want those, our friends at E6 Sports actually, I still don't know, somehow they got away with this. They've made both of these. So if you're looking for a Ted Lasso jersey, with the logo on it and the shirt sponsorship on it, they've got them over there, and we've tweeted that stuff over at the Kick Around. So I think they're like $60 or something. They're
actually really want. Really I want nice. The training top from when they were doing all the practice this week. The gray top with the
You've got your AFC Richmond T-shirt on.
Nice.
I do have one. Yes.
Where did you get that?
I got it from Jeff Bezos.
From
nice. I like that. I'm gonna start saying that. Can I steal that from you?
Sure.
It threw me for a loop for a second.
It's awesome.
Like, Jeff Bezos has an online store.
He sure does.
Yes, he does. As a matter of fact,
he has rockets and stores.
he has one really, really big one. It really threw me for a loop. So, new episodes are on Apple TV Plus every Friday. We've gotten the one. Have we decided how many episodes are in this second season?
I think
they said
10. Is it 10?
I think I believe it is 10. Yes. Just
wow.
Like last season.
Okay. And the other thing that threw me for a loop was I for some reason in my head thought Ted Lasso debuted much earlier in 2020, but I was reading on the wiki that it didn't debut until August of last year. So it's been a lot more recently than I realized.
Yeah, and in fact, they didn't start taping this season until early this year.
Yeah, this is a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah, they turned it around quickly, and they've already signed a third year.
Okay.
And then they said that's it.
All right, any other thoughts about Ted Lasso?
I got the song going.
Okay.
If you can bring up
too late for that, I guess.
All right.
Probably can't do that because it's a Cumulus station.
Yes. Okay. All right. So everybody go watch Ted Lasso. Season 2 is here. We'll continue to review it as the episodes come out. When we come back, our good friend Alexi Lawless tweeted something controversial the other day, and I think it needs discussion. And we'll do that next here on the Kick Around.
You like the Cotton Bowl?
I do love the Cotton Bowl. And Andy and Peter's Cotton Bowl adventure story time will happen here next on the Kick Around. But first, I would like to discuss a Twitter comment made by the Kick Around's own Alexi Lawless, who continues to be a highly controversial personality in the world of soccer media.
Stirs the pot, doesn't
you
he?
Either, I guess I could take around a poll. Sam, do you love hate Alexi Lawless?
Probably closer to hate than love.
Okay. Josh, do you have any opinion on this? I don't know if you do.
I do not.
Okay. Andy, love,
I
hate.
Like Alexi Lawless. I don't always agree with him, but I think he brings a good voice to the sport.
He annoys me too much.
Even
like
though you don't have to agree with what he says.
Yeah, I enjoy the fact that he's always up for being the contrarian.
Yeah, it's great.
Gee, why do you
somebody
like
needs to have that voice.
Because it's fun.
Somebody
needs to. Somebody's got to be
Because it's that familiar person. To you, Peter.
Right. Yes.
And
that's
he has
right.
the.
It's in my wheelhouse.
To do it, right? Because it's not easy being that either.
Yeah. The other day. So every day, Alexi is interesting in the way that he engages with his audience, whether it's be an adoring audience or audience of people that hate his guts, yet for some reason follow him on social media. Is that essentially he wakes up in the morning, has his coffee, you know, and then says, hey, everybody, what are we all outraged today? And they all kind of tweet at him. And eventually he'll do a little thing online. And somebody tweeted at him a couple days ago, listening to people talk about tactics is confusing if you don't play. I don't know a false eight from a true crime, which is kind of a funny line. Well, Alexi quote tweeted that with the following that I think in itself created a lot of controversy. And he knew exactly what he was doing when he did this because he, man, this is like laser bullseye at the group of people that hate him the most.
Mm-hmm. He's a provocateur.
Yes.
Which is, quote, don't worry. Here's a dirty little soccer secret. Most of it is BS. The tactical jargon used is just a cover in an attempt to look smart and explain slash comprehend a sport that is uniquely arbitrary and unpredictable, mm-hmm. which, by the way, is the most Alexi Lawless sounding phrase.
Yeah.
Quote in a long time.
And
so
many people got upset with that.
And everybody got upset. And the reason why
Not
is because
lots
well,
of people,
lots of people got upset because in the last, man, I'm going to say 3 years. Mm-hmm. The fan base of the sport of soccer has shifted so dramatically to the, like, fanatical religion of statistics
mm-hmm.
that, I've talked about this, and I think you tend to agree with me on mm-hmm. this, which is I worry that we have raised a generation of new soccer fans that don't really watch the game. They just watch highlights on YouTube. And then they go and look at stats and make clear-cut decisions on who had a good game and a bad game mm-hmm. when that's not necessarily how it really went down.
Yeah. Like sabermetrics with baseball, and everybody complains baseball is like that. Soccer's headed that way, right? And soccer's a different sport, and it just works differently.
It does. And the other thing that's happened a lot is that because the American soccer community at large is still, you know, there's certainly a percentage of the fan base that are smart about the sport and well-educated about it. But to be fair, the bulk of it don't understand the tactics and the jargon and the rules.
Or
and so
are
there's,
new to it.
Or new to it, yeah. Right, and they're all learning it. And that and because of the internet and YouTube and blogs, and it's opened up an opportunity for people to build careers or brands on the idea that they are smart about these things and they can help educate. So, you know, if Buzz Carrick is a great example of this. Buzz understands the tactics of the game very, very well, and he's highly focused his understanding of the game on a specific club. But Buzz will spend a lot of time talking about the center mids and sixes and eights mm-hmm. and tens and numerical yeah. applications.
Kind of like people do in basketball.
Yeah.
Right.
Or
three.
Or
yes,
11, exactly, six. Norm. Exactly. And so what... But what's also been born out of this is the people that have gotten into all of these new statistical
mm-hmm. the X
categories,
score, yeah,
XG
right.
and G plus
right,
and
yeah,
XG mm-hmm. minus XA mm-hmm. equals, I you know,
I'm
whatever.
Confused now.
Yeah. All of it is, and I do think those things have applications.
Mm-hmm. Correct. They have a place.
But a quick story. So on the heels of FC Dallas losing in Portland last week, there was a tweet from a pretty regular FC Dallas mm-hmm. fan who tweets a lot and had tweeted, hey, look at Justin Che's numbers. And he tweeted out a series of numbers. Man, that kid is cooking or something like that. That told me that person did not watch the game.
Right, because the eyeball test is what you're saying.
Because I watched the game and Justin Che got cooked
yeah.
and burnt and beaten and did not have a good game for a 17-year-old kid, but for whatever reason, the numbers mm-hmm. tried to tell a different story. And that's what that's what he's getting at that I think rub a lot of people the wrong way.
Yeah, I also think the truth is in the middle. Like, tactics matter, but they don't matter as much as some people think they matter. I mean, I'm very centrist when it comes to that. We talk about it off air a lot. I keep saying, let's not bog down and drill too deep in tactics. Let's keep it more general, because some people, they'll understand the game better if you don't drill so deep, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so I think he takes it to one extreme to kind of bring it to the middle a little bit, because I think it's very easy. It's very easy to defend tactics is extremely important and you have to know tactics to understand the game, right? It's easy to have that argument. He brings it to the other end to kind of put things in the middle a little bit.
Now, I think this is also a generational issue. And I think based on the prior conversation, Sam, you disagree. And you're also relatively new to the game too.
Yeah. So like when we talked about this a little bit before the pre-show, I thought this was an interesting conversation, because I think I kind of lean a little bit towards Andy's conversation in this, where I think tactics absolutely have a place, but I think they can be used as a form of gatekeeping. And I don't think Lalas really cares about that so much. At least he didn't articulate it well. But like as an almost 30-year-old soccer fan who's been with the game for about a decade now, tactics was one of the hardest things for me to pick up, and it made it kind of hard to get into the game. But it's kind of one of those things, once you breach a threshold, it becomes easier. Now, when you get into like the very nuances of it, I still kind of get muddy myself. But I would definitely say that like I think there's definitely an importance of it. And I think, you know, naysaying it like Lawless did today, which is obviously for effect. That's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, but Lawless was responding to a relative newbie to the sport and was trying to tell him, don't get discouraged if you don't know what a false nine or false eight in that case.
Right.
Was not even,
yeah, it's not
you
really
know,
a thing.
Don't worry if you don't know what a six is. By the way, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we weren't saying six for holding mid.
No.
We were using holding mid. And 10 years before that, we were all saying center mid.
Well, you know? And I would also say, and maybe I'm wrong here, but my perception is that the nomenclature of numbers, like six, eights, tens, whatever, is something kind of unique to the American sports fan, because my European soccer friends don't talk about football. They talk about it tactically, but they don't talk about it in that way.
And the numbers, yeah, except for the 10. Everybody always talks about
people
the 10.
People will talk about it. And false nine became a thing because for a period of time, that was one of the tactical fads that was going on.
And that's a basketball thing, too, because that's how the NBA fan will talk about like the 1, the 2, the 3, the 4, and the 5. So, and there's a lot of crossover between NBA and soccer these days.
Well, yeah, right. Yes. And so when I think about this, I think about it a lot like American football, the NFL, because I was a football fan before I was a soccer fan. I consider myself a really, you know, really into football. But when Bob starts talking about breaking down the 22s and routes and zones and this and all of those different structures, man, I just get lost.
I can't do it.
It's part of the reason why I stopped playing Madden football, because it just got it went from being a fun thing to like a complicated thing.
So bring it back to soccer. Everybody talks, okay, if tactics wasn't so important, the concept of tactics, then you're discrediting everything Pep Guardiola does and what he brings to the table. First of all, he has a $350 million payroll. I'm not saying anybody could win with that payroll. Part of what he's doing is he's doing it off field. He's managing that payroll as well.
Mm-hmm.
You have to manage that payroll. That goes beyond tactics. And I would argue that, yes, they're complicated tactics that and we've seen the reality show. Half his players don't understand his halftime speeches. I guarantee you that. They're not paying attention to it, right? A lot of it is for Pep himself. But Pep has fundamental tactics down very well. And it's sometimes those simple tactics and simple adjustments he makes, they're easier to understand. And those are the ones that are making a difference. And that's what I think newbie should focus on, instead of trying to figure out, you know, is it a 3-5? What, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And even like the Berhalter situation tomorrow, you know, you're going to hear a lot of 3-5-2, 5-3-2, 4-3-3, and
they're all the same at the end of the day.
And they're all in many ways exactly the same thing, especially depending on how they play it. There are a lot of really, really good soccer podcasts in the world, but my honest opinion is the vast majority of them spend too much time trying to be tactical about the game and not just enjoying the conversation of the game, which is what I think.
That is what I, yes.
Yes, what I think you and I have tried to do with the Kick Around. And I know sometimes I get too, you have to pull me off the edge, because I sometimes fall into that pit about talking about those things.
Because you enjoy it.
Enjoy it, but I realize the vast majority of people, the P1s that are ticket listeners that are, you know, new to the game or don't watch it
or enjoy at a Bob level. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they just want to hear us talk about guys rolling around on the ground or
why
who scored a worldie or
something.
Why did
Sadie score three on United? Tell us in general terms.
So that was Alexi's big thing into the universe a few days ago, and it caused quite the stir. And, you know, God bless Alexi. I know a lot of people, you don't like it. All right, when we come back, it was Andy and Peter go to the Cotton Bowl, and we'll talk about that next here on the Kick Around. We do have this final segment of today's Kick Around. Now, we are off next week because we need to recharge our batteries and get retool and get ready for the new Premier League season and all the other seasons that are getting ready to
You're a little jaded and can use some rest.
Yes, sure. It's a good way of saying it, Sam. Thank you. So, last time we were on the air, we were telling everybody, hey, it's nice knowing y'all, but Andy and I are making the decision to take the DART train.
You had down
to Fair Park on a late 9 o'clock kickoff at the Cotton Bowl for El Salvador v. Mexico. Mm-hmm. Now, I got to give my little buddy here, Andy, some credit because he came up with an ingenious alternative idea. Because when my wife found out I was taking the train down, she wasn't happy about it. And then I had the realization.
You're going with me?
Well, yeah. And then I also had the realization that to get to the Cotton Bowl and Fair Park via DART, we had to take a transfer at the Pearl Street station.
Yeah, it was a transfer,
which I'm pretty sure I hear about on the news at least once or twice a week.
It wasn't the DART train itself that it made us think.
Yeah, it was coming back thinking at like 11:45 was not the best idea. So Andy and I came up with an alternate plan that involved meeting somewhere else and then Ubering down to Fair Park. That all worked out great.
Yeah.
So we get there, what, about 30 minutes before kickoff?
Yeah, we hit traffic. So that was the one drawback from our plan. The train takes us right to the station. And you get out of the train and basically walk to the gate. Once we got about a mile away or half a mile away from the stadium.
Stuck in terrible traffic and sat there forever.
So our driver, pretty good, sneaked his way around some side streets and came out the back way, and he was able to drop us off right in front of the bowl.
Right there on the west side of Fair Park.
Where the flagpole
on Peavy.
Yeah.
Or Perry.
Perry.
Mm-hmm. And so we walk out, and it's a wonderful mix of Mexican fans and El Salvadorian fans, and they're all kind of giving each other a little bit of, you know, goofy fun. There's no animosity in them, and the vibe is very festive and friendly.
Festive. Yeah, that's a good word.
But, and I wondered how long this would take. So here I am. Uh-huh. Oh, by the way, because Andy is a bigwig. This is the other thing. This is nuts. So Andy sends me a text and says, hey, we're in the suite, so you need to make sure you dress appropriately for the suite.
So no shorts?
No shorts, all.
Right. So I'm wearing blue jeans and a button-up short-sleeve shirt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You're not wearing like a Mexican wrestler costume, and you're not wearing a flag.
It was so hot.
I bet the humidity just
murdered
you. It
was miserably. And I'm already a sweater to begin with.
And there's a little bit of a walk because we have to go.
You have to walk all the way to the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, exactly.
So we get about 200 yards into the Fair Park facility, and we happen to come across a party of El Salvadorian fans, male and female, in their mid-20s. And I suddenly start getting questioned in Spanish by this rather attractive yet highly inebriated
Salvadorian
woman.
Yeah.
Who I'm what did she ask me originally? And I don't even know why she picked me out. Maybe because I was the most gringo of everybody
so
around.
So as we were approaching the group, she was just going off. She was the one talking in her group how El Salvador was going to win today, and they have to win today, and they're going to win. And they're all looking at her like, you know, simmer down.
You're a little drunk.
And then as you're passing, then I walk by quickly. I'm leading the way. I'm walking fast. I like to walk
Andy's
fast.
Andy's a fast walker.
Yeah, really I am a fast walker. And then you're like behind me. And I'm thinking to myself, the minute you were even Stevens with them on the walk, right? Because we're like,
she's going to pick me out.
She's going to, yeah.
And she
sure
did.
Sure enough, she did. She goes, hey, you, who do you want? El Salvador or Mexico? is what she said, right?
Right. And I looked around and I saw that she's with a bunch of El Salvadorian guys. And then in the right in here, sound or whatever I'm trying to say, right next to them are a bunch of Mexican fans.
Yeah, right. So you can't say either.
A little,
right?
little me is little like, I don't know what the right answer
Cayman
is.
Cayman Islands.
So I came up with the worst possible answer.
Oh, no.
I looked at her and I went, I don't know. I'm American.
Oh,
I
Peter.
I don't know. I'm American.
And they all looked at me and then giggled. And I thought, I'm the lamest dude in the whole world.
But that was your way of saying, hey, I want a good game. Let the best team win. Let's all party and just be one
Andy
big
was
happy
so
family.
Embarrassed, he like no, practically ran away and left me there by myself.
I had to hang tight in case things got out of control. They didn't. You kept walking. She went off and did something else. And so then we get to, because they've set up a perimeter now.
Yeah, so we get to the Cotton Bowl and we see this incredible mass of humanity. I can't even begin to tell you how many people.
Not even at the Cotton Bowl. There's a perimeter around the
it
Cotton
was a,
Bowl.
What's the, where Big Tech's usually
yeah,
stands.
Right. Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
Where that plaza is, that's there the- is an incredible sea of humanity. And it turns out that they've decided everybody has to go through a checkpoint, and they only have two checkpoints for the entire stadium, one on the west side and one on the east side.
It's very similar at the Winter Classic when they had that.
Did they do that then, too?
It wasn't as bad, but it was very similar, and that created a lot of traffic jams.
So we should probably tell you that what we had learned was that the CONCACAF officials and Fair Park officials had decided to limit the attendance to the lower bowl of the Cotton Bowl, which is somewhere between 45,000 and 50,000 people, right? Is that, am I saying that correct?
Yeah, 45. Yeah.
So, and we're 20 minutes from kickoff, and it's clear that people are having a hard time getting through. So Andy very smartly says, this west side seems to be way too many people, so let's go to the other side. It can't possibly be worse. So we go all the way over to the east. We walk all the way around. Somehow I don't get accosted by anybody or called any names or anything. And then we make it all the way to the side. And again, the entire time, festive. Nobody's fighting. Nobody's throwing things at each other. And we finally somehow, Andy's bigwig status gets us past having to go through the entire checkpoint.
Yeah, we go through in the back way.
And we end up riding in a cart to the entrance.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, like they saw this one, these two people saw Andy and they're like, hey, Andy Swift, oh, what? And the next thing I know, I'm riding on the back of a cart up to the door of the Cotton Bowl.
In my defense, it's like 300 plus games I've worked at the Cotton Bowl, so I know those peeps.
And then we go inside, we finally get upstairs, and we sit in we're in the suites, which are on the upper deck, and man, the scenes of that game were so damn fantastic.
They were. The whole lower bowl was full. It got full after kickoff because of the mass of humanity we saw outside. So it took everybody a while to get in. And the interesting part was everybody expected this to be a heavy pro-Mexican crowd, right? But it was 50-50. It looked actually more Salvadorian.
I was going to say
because
it was,
they were wearing blue.
I was going to say it looked more 60-40 El Salvadorian.
Yeah.
And somebody told us prior to the game that the walk-up, and you predicted this, mm-hmm. that they went from thinking they were only going to get 25,000-30,000 people to the El Salvadorian crowd showing up and it becoming the majority of the crowd.
Yeah. Salvadorians, you know, day of game purchasers, walk up crowd. And now they sold out the lower bowl before walk up. So it was all sold on Saturday and then Sunday leading up to the game, the tickets. But it just shows you how important that Salvadorian soccer community was for the development of the franchise too, because the Burn, FC Dallas, when it was the Burn, we really depended heavily on the Salvadorian community.
Yeah, Zarco in mm-hmm. particular
Zarco.
Was a
yep.
huge draw. And so the game itself was interesting. Watching soccer at the Cotton Bowl is such a treat. I wish they'd play all the soccer at the Cotton Bowl. And it's changed a lot since back in the days because they've refurbished it and it's got that giant high definition video board on one side that's really cool. The field still continues to look immaculate and perfect. But what we noticed is the game went on and as the crowd was filling in, and by the way, the El Salvadorian fans are so fun to be around. They're so good at creating an atmosphere.
Yes, the drums, horn, not the horns, but trumpets, music, singing.
Yeah, they had like a little band that was playing
music.
Music.
It was nice.
Yeah. It was really great. And And as the game went on, we finally realized there's kind of like three tiers to the Cotton Bowl, and we're in the top tier looking down, and the second tier is completely empty beneath us before you get to the bottom. And then suddenly we began to look across the stadium at the second tier on the other side of the stadium, and we began to see people in green and blue leaking out into the top tier. And then we would see a security guard chasing those people around. And it got so bad at one point, they just said, screw it, and they opened the upper tier up and just let people come in.
Yeah, like an overflow, right?
Yeah. And so I would say 10 minutes into the second half, I would say the upper tier was, what, 20% full?
Yeah. Both sides 20% full. So, yeah, maybe 10% full when you count the whole thing around. But.
And I'm going to guess there was probably 60,000 people there by the end of it. And
You don't think that was people that had tickets for the lower bowl that they're just allowing to go up because it was so...
No, because the lower bowl never looked like it lost any humanity.
Yeah, so they just opened the gates.
I think maybe they decided they could sell more tickets or they just let people in or I don't know.
Because the announced attendance was 45. Anyway, it was a great crowd, and it was nice to see the Cotton Bowl full for soccer. And full and being used for a big event like that.
Yeah, it really was a throwback to the days. We haven't seen that kind of crowd for a game that meant something. I mean, there's been some of those weird summertime tour things that have had pretty decent attendances at the Cotton Bowl. But to see a game that meant something to the people watching it and the result actually have an effect on a tournament was a lot of fun. We just haven't seen that in a long time. And again, I was tweeting about this the next day. Every time I go to Fair Park, I continue to be baffled how we as a city have never figured out a way to turn Fair Park into a 365 day a year destination for both locals, for the surrounding community, the surrounding neighborhoods, and for us as a city.
We need three segments. And we can talk.
I know. And because Mike Reiner was like, I can explain it. And, everybody chimed in. I got a really, really nice message from somebody on one of the committees. And it gave me a lot. There's a lot of really conflicting factors as to why it is what it is. But it does bum you out when you walk around and you see this thing and you see downtown Dallas off in the distance and you see all the beautiful Art Deco buildings and all the open space. And you think about all of the mixed use development things that have been built around the Dallas-Fort Worth area out of weird places. And then you think about Fair Park and you're like, man, that seems to be a no-brainer.
Yeah. And other cities in the U.S. have had similar type infrastructure locations that they've developed into something like that. So why can't we do it here? Let's do this.
Well, the crazy ironic thing is largely tied to the fact that the one iconic event that makes Fair Park its special thing is also the thing that keeps it from being this 365-day-a-year destination.
The elephant in the room.
Yeah. And it's and you know what? It is an understandable complication.
Sure.
Like, I get it.
Yeah.
It would be difficult. Like, to build to convert the Cotton Bowl into a pro team stadium when you've got all the, because how did you guys, I can't remember, how did you deal with the burn and the state fair?
We were granted an exemption to be able to play during state fair, but people had to purchase a ticket to the state fair to gain
interest.
That's
right. Yeah. Well, that was the problem, right? Yeah. You had a pro team playing in the Cotton Bowl during the state fair, and there was the complication of how do you make that happen, which meant now you got to buy a state fair ticket. Yeah.
And it was built into the price, but it's another layer of, it's hard enough to sell a soccer ticket or any other event ticket. You know, it doesn't have to be just soccer. And then you add that layer on top. It just makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah. So many cool things about that place. And I'm sure the future of Fair Park is such a mystery to me, but I love going to the Cotton Bowl. It is great, and I hope everybody gets a chance to do it. And then I get a tweet from former Kick Around producer Tim, who said that he actually...
Hey, where are my tickets or what?
No, he thought it was like some empty field or something. Like, he's never been to Fair Park, and he had no idea what it was.
Has he never went to the fair?
He says he's never been to the fair. He's never seen Fair Park. In the tweet that I posted about it, I did this really beautiful shot of Fair Park.
The Esplanade.
And with downtown Dallas in the background. Yeah. He seemed stunned that was actually what Fair Park was.
I think that's part of the problem, though, is there's a stigma attached to that area, the Fair Park area, the Fair Park location.
Mm.
But it's changed. It's nice. And they're improving it. They're renovating it. But it needs to get to really nice. It needs to go through nicer, right? To get to really nice.
Yeah,
you can't go from. I mean, you got to get there. So.
Yes. So if you ever get a chance to go watch soccer at the Cotton Bowl, I cannot recommend it any more highly. All right. Thank you to DJ for doing his fantastic ticker work. Thank you to Sam for producing. And thank you to Josh for joshing. And go Burnley. And thank you, P1s. Go on. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Go on. Get out there. Get stuck in. And win your 50s. I'm going to go home and complain to my wife that she's with a bunch of El Salvadorian guys.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM Flower Mound.